devo dire che nel no.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome to the show. Kind of an early one this week. Of course, my shows have been all over the map lately anyway, so totally different audience. Luke is in the chat this morning, and a few other people are watching. But today, and those of you listening to the podcast, you really don't care what time it comes on. But today, Mama Bear's here, Mama Bear Prepper. Good morning. Today, what we're going to do is we're talking with Mark Dixon, who is an author, just recently published a book, Enemy at the Helm. And he sent me a copy of this before it actually came out. Read the book. Really cool. Wanted to talk about that a little bit. Mark has been a listener of the podcast for a long time now. Is into preparedness. I was reading you're into regenerative gardening. You're a surgeon. You got a lot of self-defense stuff going on. I mean, just instead of me sort of explaining everything, I'll let you go ahead and tell everybody what exactly what you're doing right now, all your accolades, whatever you want to say. Pimp yourself out.
Well, thank you, Dale. As you mentioned, I am a surgeon. I've been practicing for about 30 years now. And if you count training, it's more than that. So I'm just about retired. I might have worked my last shift last week. So that's a pretty good feeling. A couple of years ago, my wife and I sold our family home after we raised four kids successfully. And when I say successfully, that means they're all out of the house and paying their own bills.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Downsized to a little farmhouse on more land than what we had. So we've been farming since then. This has been a couple of years now. And I've been doing combatives work for several years. You know, like any good Texan, as you can tell, I'm from Texas. Started out with firearms. And then I realized the more I did it, limited I was in, and anybody is really, in their use. There's a lot of limitations to using a firearm. So I found a guy who does a lot of hand-to-hand type work. So self-defense, and we call it all combatives. It involves a bunch of stuff. So I've been doing that for a few years now too. So I think this all really kind of ties into being ready for as many different problems that might arise in the future as there could be.
Yeah. And you did send me a couple of video clips too, of some of the training you do. And I wanted to play those, and I apologize for those listening to the podcast. You're going to have to come over and watch the video. It shows some of the stuff you do rather than just the standing still and shooting. Some of the things that you should probably train at and get a little bit better at. Knife work too. Something that if I tried, we'll get into that in a bit, but very, very cool. I've got a few of your links and stuff, but let's real quick talk about your book before we get into all that other stuff. The book is, let me see if I can pull up your website here. The book is titled Enemy at the Helm. And like I said, before we started this show, I really hope I don't, give away too much information about the book, but you sent it to me a while back and kind of explain to me, this book seems like it's a mix between almost like a CSI. You've got your disaster aspects of it. You've got your terrorism. You've got a lot of that different stuff going on, but it explained kind of what your vision for this book is and where you plan on going after this.
Sure. The way it got started was my wife and I were on a cruise, and we saw, as we were leaving port, a little Coast Guard vessel matching our speed perfectly off our flank. And we were enjoying a nice libation and looking out the window at this. And I said, well, I know why he's there, and I know how to defeat it. That would make a good story. She said, you're right. You need to write it. So I blew her off because I'm not a writer. And, but once I got some time on my hands, several months later, I said, well, why not? Let's go ahead and do this. And so the story is all, it revolves around, and I talked about the cruise ship aspect. That's pretty much the beginning of the story, but it revolves around how an ordinary family, who's based out of Texas, but they've got a family member in Seattle and another one who's down in South America, are affected by this global disaster that's a man-made terrorism event, and how they are drawn into finding the perpetrators and then dealing with them as best they can. So yeah, it's full of action. I had someone call last night and said, man, there is no dead space at all in this book. He enjoyed it immensely. So,
yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you what, and this is your first book. And I honestly, have you done any writing throughout your whole life? Cause it was pretty good. I think of it from writing blog articles and stuff. And then when I read like Sarah Hathaway's books or Chris Weatherman's books, and for me to put a whole book together, it would be chaos and gibberish. So when you guys do it and actually formulate a story, it seems like you've had some experience with it or you're a good writer. Is this just something you just started doing?
Well, thanks, Dale. I mean, you know, growing up in school, you have to write. I never really enjoyed the assignments I was given, but I just kind of slogged through it. I did have a surgical paper published, it seems like a million years ago now, in a scientific surgical journal, but that's totally different. That's technical writing. And so I haven't really done anything until this. And it's funny that you should mention the chaos of it. The my daughter knows that I'm very methodical about everything. And so she asked me if I, you know, plotted out everything. I had a big outline and going from this plot to the next, to the next, to the next. I said, no, I just went with the flow wherever it took me. And she just couldn't believe it. It's just a different process. Everybody does it differently, I'm finding out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's very good nonetheless. And for those of you listening and you hear the noise in the background, Mark's at a gun range. So those are fun sounds in the background you hear from time to time.
Yes.
He's live from location, I suppose.
Yeah. We just finished training. Yeah.
Did you? Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. So the one part of the book, I mean, you can sort of tell by the name of the book and all that, but it goes into, and it's something, you know, none of us, you don't really think about a whole lot, but when you went into the whole supply lines and all the disruptions and the chaos and something that it doesn't have to be the world powers, you know, like the things that are going on these days in Ukraine or the Middle East or anything like that, it can be, you know, those smaller cell type things. And I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit later, too, that just wreak massive chaos. And that's sort of where this goes, right? The book.
Yes, indeed. That's exactly right. So and that's just another thing to think about. I think it's real easy as preppers for us to get almost tunnel vision as to what we think is going to happen. And what one of the things is that I want to get across is that you need to be open-minded to possibilities of things that you hadn't thought about before. You need to be able to be flexible and be adaptable so that you can address whatever the problem is in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's called the black swan events, where while they're really rare, there are things that happen. We can be focused because of the mainstream media and the news cycle and this and that. We can be focused on these big things and be totally consumed by those. And that something, you know, out of the blue happens and really disrupts our daily lives. And that goes to and I've talked about this for a few shows straight now, the controlling what you can control aspect of it. We can't do anything about what Putin's doing. We can't control anything with the Middle East and all that, but we can control our situation at home. And that sort of goes to your training, because that is something that is going to help you personally and your family.
Right. I mean, the conflict can be across the world, or it can be at the other end of your state or the other end of your arm, right? You gotta deal with the one at the other end of your arm first. But conflicts on the other side of the planet can affect you too in different ways. So you just gotta think about those ways that might affect you. And part of it is realizing what you truly need. I mean, what do we all need? There's a ton of people out there who are just they think they need all the money left in the world. But really, we just need food and water and shelter,
yeah,
right? So, and a way to protect it. and protect your baby.
It really does come down to that. And the things going, you almost have to look three or four steps ahead is my philosophy on this, because the things going on in the Middle East, in Ukraine, the things going on right here in this country, with the shenanigans they pull in Washington, all sides of the aisle, you really got to look three, four steps ahead and think, how is this going to, in the long run, maybe 6 months, maybe a year from now, how is this going to affect me? The economy is a big one right now. Sure. So yeah, you really have to kind of prep locally is what I always say, is think about yourself and your family.
Exactly. And the way I look at it is, the people that you think you might be dependent on are going to let you down.
Yeah.
So you just got to be ready for it. Not be surprised by it. It's easy to get surprised by it. And some people get paralyzed by it. But if you know going in that, hey, I got five people that I can really and truly trust, and that's okay. Got it.
Yeah. And you know what? There's also the people that will surprise you, that you right. just completely don't, you have no faith in, you won't depend on, but all of a sudden they are a major asset in, you know, whatever the situation may be. Even if it's just an economic thing where you need a helping hand, or, you know, you just never know. But yeah, don't get so married to your plan. You think it's going to go exactly like it does in Hollywood.
That's right. You know, and the thought about the Chinese parachuting into Colorado or something like the Red Dawn movie, that's kind of fun to think about. But the Chinese aren't going to do that. I don't think they don't have any need to. They're so good at pitting us against ourselves that they don't need to do that. They're not going to tell the North Koreans to put an EMP over us, even though they could. I really don't think they are going to do that, because that will initiate all out war. And why do that when they just destroy us from within? That's what they're doing.
Yeah. And I don't think they want that, because economically, everything is so tied. And this sort of goes into your book as well. Everything's so tied in these days globally that it would hurt them as well. It may be in the short term, but yeah, they are smart, I guess, about the things that they do. They will, you know, the spying, the espionage, the you know, stealing trade secrets, all the stuff that they do that is behind the scenes and nobody really gives a second thought to. Even, you know, and this is maybe a little bit of conspiracy theory, but even with Hollywood and how they've gotten into Hollywood and the popular culture, TikTok is one. The version of TikTok here in the United States is completely different than the version of TikTok in China.
That's what I hear. Yeah.
Yeah. So they've got other ways of getting the job done than that. And then you've got the Middle East, where, you know, that is more of a, their tactics are blow stuff up, where it's, and they don't really, as far as the economic ties and all that, they don't have all that. So very so interesting.
So far. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Angry or All American Prepper, what's going on? He's in the chat. He said, China is in it for the long game. It is that situation. And I think, you know, because we're Americans, we tend to give America a pass, but it's the same game. We're just part of this team. That's all. So it's a long game by all the superpowers. Yeah. With the book though. So this is your first book. What are your plans going forward? Do you have, is this going to be a series of three, or you just going to have another one that builds on this, or where do you plan on going right now anyway?
I've got at least two more books to follow this in my brain, and I've already started the first one. So it's going to be fun. I can tell you that. We're going to explore more of the ideas of how to handle shortages of everything. But also it's going to get more intense in finding out who the perpetrator really is ultimately. And it can be any one of a number of people. So, So we're going to do that at the same time as realizing how important mindset is to surviving any difficult situation. If you set your mind to being able to not only survive, but overcome, adversity, and you truly have that strong mindset, you can do that. One of the characters,
sorry about that.
That's fine. One of the characters in the book has shown that he has that innate, mindset capabilities. So that's going to be explored more in the next couple of books as well.
Yeah. Hey, local preppers here. What's going on, LP? Denise is here. She's said, dang, near missed it. Now, I asked this earlier, and if you did answer, I wasn't paying attention. But this, the genre of this, as far as with as preppers are concerned, this isn't your typical prepper fiction. You know, when you think of the Chris Weathermans or the Franklin Hortons, but I mentioned it's got sort of a mix. It's sort of a thriller, a crime drama. It's got the disaster aspects of it. As far as moving forward, do you plan on keeping sort of the same, I don't want to say that same target audience, because I don't really know what that target audience would be other than, you know, people that really like the mystery and all that. You plan on keeping that same thing, or you plan on moving more towards the, not really the preparedness thing, but mixing a little bit more of that in?
Well, yeah, there is going to be more preparedness type situations in the next book. Because
yeah, that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah. And so I'm planning to illustrate ways that it seemed to work and ways that you probably don't want to try to make happen.
Yeah.
So that's going to be part of it, but it's going to be mixed in with still the hunt for the bad guys. So.
Yeah, which I think is great. I love prepper fiction too. I don't want to talk crap about prepper fiction, but sometimes it especially when you do a show like mine and you're into prepping all the time, it sort of gets like, okay, yeah, this is, it's almost reads like an instruction manual, which is good for some people.
Yeah, it can be formulaic, and I've learned stuff from those, but I thought I would do this a little bit differently.
Yeah, and I think it's great. I personally think it's great because it does kind of keep you thinking about, okay, this guy's doing that, this person's doing that, all the stuff's going on, rather than, okay, this, you know, Franklin Horton does a good job with his stuff because he builds that story in there as well. There's a few good authors too, but I really do like that where it's got the disaster aspect, the, you know, that main thing in the background, and then it's got how the story unfolds. So it's just really cool. Looking forward to the next book, whatever. Do you have any sort of time frame right now, or you're just getting started and who knows?
Well, I've done at least, I've got a very long prologue so far for the next book that starts off over in Europe that from a couple hundred years ago. So that's going to be fun to incorporate into that. But another or so chapters at least on top of that. And we'll see where that goes. I've got kind of an overall plan in my brain, but I sit down at the keyboard and just start typing away and it goes where it goes. And so.
Very cool. Very cool. And for anybody watching right now, anybody listening to the podcast later on, I'm going to have all the links to Mark's website, Amazon, where you can get the book. I've even got up here where we're going to talk about some of your training next, where you train at, just all anything that we talk about today, it'll be in the show notes and you can check Mark out at his website or on Amazon. But I wanted to pivot a little bit and talk about your training, because you sent me a couple of these videos and I thought they were pretty cool, because as I love going to the range, and even if it's just a stationary target, that's fine. I mean, it's still fun to, you know, shoot some rounds and practice and all that. But what you're doing is sort of what preppers, I mean, a lot of preppers probably do it, but a lot of us talk about it. I'm talking about myself here when I say I need to get out, and instead of shooting at a stationary target, I need to take a class. I need to do something where I'm moving around, because in a situation where it is that life and death situation that you might be in, dude's not going to just stand there.
Right.
Most of the time
they'll be shooting back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or some aggressing on you somehow. Right. So.
Yeah. Or doing the same thing that you should be doing, trying to find cover, concealment, and,
right,
you know,
right,
gain the upper hand and all that.
Uh-huh.
So I put together this little montage, I suppose, of this is with you doing some shooting things. And then the next one I've got is the knives and stuff. And I want to pick your brain on that a little bit. But okay, with this one right here, I'll put this on full screen. This is just like a minute and a half. This is like three of the clips that I'd put together. And then we can talk about them individually or you know, however we want to do this afterwards. But let me go ahead and see if I can find the play button and we'll play this.
Okay.
All right, shooter ready.
Ready.
And move. Oh, shit. Bad guy. He's shooting. Vehicle down. Bail. Find that guy, Doc. Find him. Where'd he go? Take his buddy down. Take him down. Boom, boom. Nice. Safely.
Ready.
Shooter ready.
Ready.
Bad guy. Ready. And bad guy.
What are you doing?
Nice.
Nice. All right. So let me take this off here. When I first watched that, I was looking at your truck and seeing if there were any bullet holes or anything around it. Because I was like, it's pretty cool how you do that. And for those listening, he was doing drills where he was driving in his truck. One where you ran into the target. The other one where you're shooting out windows and then you get out of the truck and you go around it. From what I can see, you no holes, no broken windows or anything like that, right?
No, that's correct. There were no broken windows on that. One of the things that I found out afterwards, when you're shooting next to your rearview mirror on the outside, on the driver's side, that concussion effect from the gun will tend to break off kind of the backside of that mirror. So,
oh, no kidding.
So there's a little hole on the front forward side of the mirror, not the part that you see, but the plastic on the other side. And so I've been told that people in the know, they know that you've been doing that. So,
Yeah. Well, and I mentioned before I played that about how, you know, shooting at just stagnant targets that are just standing there and you need to do things like that. And that first clip where you basically ran into the dummy out there. That person is not going to be standing there getting out of the way. But I think the reason that this stuff is important is because you doing that, if just by training the things that you're doing, if you are in a situation like that, you're going to have a better chance of navigating that situation than I will with never have done a scenario like that. So. Exactly. Even though, you know, you can't have a real person running around and you try to run him over, that's not going to work.
Right. There was actually, if anybody remembers the Allen, Texas Outlet Mall shooting, there was a guy, it was about 6 months ago, and Allen is a suburb of Dallas. He got out of his car and started shooting people at this outlet mall. And he killed, I don't know, half a dozen at least, maybe more. There was a guy in a truck behind him who had his dash cam running, and he saw the guy get out of his car. So that guy stood up outside of the driver's side of his car with the door open and started shooting. He obviously had his rifle and he was shooting at those guys. Well, the guy in the pickup immediately put his truck in reverse and got the heck out of Dodge. Well, I had done that exact drill maybe a year ahead of time. And so I'd already been thinking about what to do if that situation arises, what could be done. So I very quickly realized, well, gosh, if it was just me in that truck, that would have been an easy decision. I would have pinned that guy up against his own car door and hopefully at a high rate of speed and taken care of the situation that way. I would have done the same if my wife was in the car, because she trains with me also. But if it was my granddaughter in the truck with me, no, I would not have done that. I would have backed up as fast as I could. So you got to be thinking about all these different situations. There's not a one size fits all for anything. You got to be ready to think on the fly and act on the fly. Trust your gut.
Yeah. And that's what the training does. It gets you mentally ready for that. And it gets you, I suppose, more ammo in the brain toolbox, I suppose, if that's a if that makes sense to anyone. You can run through scenarios quicker when all the chips are on the table, when something requires action. So by training, you're ready for that stuff. You moving around the truck and using the truck as cover is also something that does your instructor sort of go through the steps that you should take, say, after you smack the dude, he's on the ground, this is where you should go and why and all that?
Right. The most effective sources of cover are the engine block and the axles, right, where the wheels are. So try to cover behind those if you can. But if you still got to take the guy down, you got to use your cover and concealment as necessary to effectively engage and eliminate that threat.
Yeah. Very, very cool. And this is, let me pull this up real quick. This is the place that you go for this training, right? 3D Martial Arts?
Yes. Yes. And the owner operator is Larry Stevenson, and he is just an absolute stud. He's former law enforcement, big city SWAT team member and gang unit member and human trafficking team member and canine. I mean, he did everything. So, plus, he was a champion bare knuckle, full contact karate fighter, professional fighter. So he's got all of the hand to hand stuff too. And so we do a lot of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, boxing, all the hand to hand combatives as well. So generally, what I do is one day a week I go and do the hand to hand stuff in his gym, or sometimes just lifting, or calisthenic type stuff to improve cardio, and then one day a week I'm at the range. That's typically the way I try to do it.
Yeah. And is he the one that in a couple of your videos, right? Does he do the firearm stuff and I mean, does he do it all, basically?
All of it.
All of it. Okay.
Yeah. He's the guy you want by your side if bad things are happening. Yeah,
no kidding. I was looking at, I think it's this picture of him. You can see with all the knives right there.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, yeah. That dude, and that's him, right?
That's him. Yep.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, I'm going to stick with that guy. And things are, going sideways. That's where I'm going to be.
Yeah. Good guy.
So with that, and I believe this is the same guy you're doing this in this next video I've got. You're doing some knife throwing.
Yes.
And it's with him as well, right? The instructing
Correct.
You?
Yes.
Okay. Let me share this. This one's a little bit shorter, but this is pretty interesting because, like I was talking about a minute ago, that you're, I don't know, this first shot, you're, I don't know, 2 feet, 3 feet away from it, and you're nailing the throwing knives. I would be bouncing those off, and I'd have one in my forehead or something. But with that stationary target, and I'll go ahead and play this, but with that stationary target, it would be a little bit different, but at the same time, your thought process, you'd be thinking about it far before that person got to that point, right?
Yes. Yes. Correct. And the way I look at it is that is just giving you time to create space, and time and space gives you options, right? So that's my way of looking at it. The other way you absolutely have to think about it, if you're going to be throwing a knife at somebody, there's a very good chance it could be coming back at you. So you have to allow for that too.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me play this. Cause you are, how long have you been doing this?
Oh my gosh. These knife videos were, I don't know, a year or two ago. I haven't done a whole lot since then, a little bit. I did some about a month ago. But that is not something I need to practice more. I do need to practice more, but I'm not doing a lot of that lately.
Well, I'll tell you what, you were in the videos you got anyway, you were doing pretty well. Let me go ahead and play this instead of just talking about it so everybody can actually see what the hell we're talking about. I'm sure they're in the chat going, come on, play the damn video. let me go ahead and play this real quick.
Nice. Very.
Yep, that'd be me. So that's
right. And that one that bounced off only bounced off because it hit another knife there. Right.
Yeah, I heard that. That's you know, somebody's standing there. They're not going to let you throw six knives at them. But the fact that they all hit, and the fact that you've got that, I suppose it's the muscle memory or whatever that will allow you to, you know, if you see there's a situation evolving, right? There's the gears are going to be going off in your head. You're going to be thinking about this, and you're going to be thinking about what do I have. What do I do if this? What do I do if that? So if that situation did come down to the you had no other choice, that is something that you absolutely could use for self-defense. Not necessarily to the face, but if you needed to. I mean,
right.
Sometimes you need to. You can't be aiming for the kneecaps when the dude comes still coming after you.
And to be honest, if someone has a knife that is coming at them, that someone else threw, they're going to be moving, you know.
Yeah,
you've interrupted their OODA loop, and all of a sudden their idea, hopefully, of trying to get at you or your loved ones, they might just decide it's not worth it and to hopefully go away. But
yeah,
they're going to be moving. It's going to be changing. They're going to have to think about what to do next, and you've already there. You beat them to the next stage by that point.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, if they've got a knife stuck in their chest and you've got another one in your hand, they're definitely rethinking what they're doing, whether you took them out or not. So, yeah, that along with, you know, firearms, the same thing as a knife, along with, you know, being useful, that seems like just like a fun skill to be able to have. And yes, throwing knives are relatively cheap. You can do it anywhere in your backyard. So,
right.
Definitely. Now, with that, the knife that you had on your back, is that a throwing knife as well, or is that a different? Because it looked like it had a handle.
It does have a handle, and you can use it for whatever you want. It's a little bit big. It was oriented in a horizontal type holster that is perfect for doing stuff like this. It's big and heavy. It's a little too big for me. You know, a bigger frame guy could probably conceal it better. For me, it kind of sticks out a little bit on either side, but I have carried it around, and so it has a handle, and you can use it for any knife function you want.
Doesn't the weight, as far as with throwing knives, the weight of the handle, doesn't that affect how they travel and then stick?
Absolutely, and every knife is different in that respect. So their balance is different. Hello, Mr. Fly. And so you have to take that into account whenever you're using it. You have to take into account not only the balance, whether you're throwing it with leading with your index finger or your thumb, you can use it different ways. Your distance from the target matters. Whether you're stepping forward with one foot or the other matters. You have to do all of those maneuvers to get an idea of the limitations of the use of that particular knife that you're carrying.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. All American Prepper in the chat too. He does a lot of training. He's got a mag group, and he does a lot with airsoft where they go out and they just, you know, have those sort of, you know, two separate teams. One's the aggressor and one's defending, sort of the same thing, but all of that training, I really like, you know, what you were doing, what he does, because it sort of takes you out of your comfort zone. One, it's fun. It looks like it's a blast, but it's also real situations. That one that we played, I believe it was the first part of the first clip where you were in looked like the bed of a truck traveling away from the target. Yeah. I think you hit three out of four. which is pretty good with a firearm.
When I sent that to you, my sound was off, and so I couldn't really tell what I hit. But that that was a simulation of where you're running away from a problem, but they're still coming after you. And you just throw yourself in the back of the truck, and you're laying down cover fire as the driver's going away. Yeah, that was my truck, too.
Yeah. And that's a real, I mean, hopefully it never happens. The odds are something like that would never happen to the average person. But if it did, you know, especially if you've got a group of people and one's driving the truck away, maybe there's a car following you. Being able to, while things are not, you know, set, you know, you're not, you don't have the exact stance and, you know, everything's not perfect, and being able to hit a target, that's just good training right there. Just good things to do.
Not hit your own feet because you're laying down.
Yeah.
between your feet sometimes.
Yeah. So you've got, other than the whole, the firearms and the self-defense and all that stuff, you do quite a few other things as well. I was reading your bio on your website, and I knew that you were a surgeon before, and we talked about that a little bit earlier. That's a fantastic, that medical experience is fantastic in a, just a, in a preparedness sort of, if everything goes to crap type situation, a fantastic skill to have. My wife, Lisa, is a registered nurse. Her brother's a doctor. Her mom's a nurse. So, you know, it's I joke with Lisa and tell her that's why I married her.
Yeah.
Take that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you also do, you call it regenerative gardening. What exactly is that? And I was going to ask earlier, how many acres do you have now?
We've got about 35.
35. Wow. All I want's 10, man.
Yeah. It's good. Part of it is in a floodplain, so you can't do a whole lot with that. But on the other side of that floodplain is another floodplain, so nobody can build across from me. So that's good.
That's good.
Yeah. So when we bought the place, it had just been in hay for the previous 10 to 15 years. The previous owner, he just farmed hay with it. There's a lot of mature pecan trees on it, but they're not... They weren't in necessarily great shape. The pecans had a lot of weevils and stuff in it. And I did a soil test and found that it was, there was hardly any organic matter in the soil. They'd just been harvesting the hay and taking it off site, and that was it. So it was my goal to convert it into fruits and vegetables. And we've been steadily working toward that. And I think there's a video on some of my social media sites about some of those gardens that I've put in for that. But, I put in well over 50 fruit trees and shrubs. I just built a really long, like 400 foot long mound of wood layered with dirt. It's called a Hugel mound, and we're gonna start using that for food production as well. The regenerative part comes from, you know, you hear about sustainable gardening, and that means that your inputs are the same as your output. So you're not really taking anything away. It's sustainable. Yeah. What we really try to do is build the soil so it can support more and more crops and trees and that sort of thing going forward. So that's the regenerative part. And the key to that is adding animals. So the animals help in three different ways. At least they mow the grass. They provide fertilizer for the grass that's there. And depending on the animal, they can feed you later. So we've got cattle and chickens and horses, and we've got bees now too. So we're
wow, cool.
Trying to do everything. Yeah,
it's a good thing you're retired now. You got a full plate.
I'm just as busy now as I was before. We were talking just last night. It's crazy how that happened. Yeah.
Yeah. And that, you know, we've been talking about training this whole show, and that absolutely it is the same type of situation, because you had mentioned how there was no organic material in the soil, in the dirt, right. Because they just basically grew stuff and didn't bother.
Hold it up. Yeah.
And that is that idea people have about gardening. I'm going to grow some tomatoes. I'm going to grow some lettuce, whatever. You just put it in the ground. And then it should grow. And you don't think about how the next time you put something in that same exact spot, what that first thing you grew, how that changes everything and what nutrients that took out of it. So It is that same type of situation. And it could, you know, depending on the situation, be more important of a skill to have than the firearms in a lot of different situations. Being able to feed yourself. I think we talked about that in the beginning, right? It boils down to three things.
Yeah.
Food, water, and being able to defend all that stuff.
Right. Yeah. Being able to protect yourself from the elements, and some of those elements have bad intentions toward you. So that's exactly right. So, yeah. And I think everybody will tell you, even the soldiers will tell you, hey, I'm not fighting all the time, period. I'm not.
Yeah.
And the military actually does a good job of saying, hey, if you're not in active combat or training for active combat, you need to be improving your position. So part of that is being able to grow your own food so that you can not be dependent on the grocery stores when they run out in 3 days, when the local or regional or national disaster hits and there's no resupply coming. Right.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. I never really thought about that, but that's an absolutely good point. Yeah. You prepare, you train, you do that stuff, but you got to get, especially if you have it, like All American Prepper was saying right here, live food never spoils. That's why it's a good idea to have a homestead. If you've got that stuff, you need to, you can go out and train and be able to, you know, run somebody over or shoot from the bed of a truck or something. You got to be able to defend all that stuff. If you got livestock, you got cows, there could be a situation where it does get really bad and people see that as, you know, that's the new McDonald's right there. And they're coming to get your stuff.
Right. Yeah.
If there's nothing else. Yeah. It's, you know, I'm sick of eating squirrels. Look at that big fat cow over there.
Well, and they say that in the Depression, all the big game disappeared in a short period of time. The deer and the elk and stuff. And I'm sure the cattle were the same way. I'm sure they had a decrease in the overall number of cattle during that time for the same reason.
Yeah. And see, we've got, I talk about this all the time, but we've got deer that roam through our yard, our property here all the damn time. But I think that if it did get so bad where there were the shelves at the grocery stores weren't stocked or anything like that, especially out here where I live and, you know, the rural areas where everybody owns a gun and knows how to hunt and all that, the deers that roam through my yard every single day, probably two, 3 days. And they'd be gone because everybody'd be thinking exactly the same way as me. I'm getting mine while I can.
Right. Right. And you don't have to use a gun on those either. I mean, if you're good with a bow and arrow, then it's a little quieter and you're not attracting as much attention. So,
yeah, I've got my compound bow and I haven't practiced in a while, but yeah, I could perch myself on the roof in a little ghillie suit or something like that. And
well, and that's another potential self-defense weapon that you can use too.
Yeah. Quiet. Silent. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's thinking about all that stuff. And it's a very cool conversation because it is that stuff that, you know, we talk about all the, and we're going to talk a little bit about it here before we get out of here, but we talk about all the stuff going on all over the world and we got to do this, we got to do that. And this concerns me and that concerns me, but everything we've been talking about today is sort of, how you, I don't want to say solve those problems, but it's how you work on those issues without focusing on those issues. If that makes any sense at all, are you following me?
Absolutely. And one of the things that I think is coming that is going to be unavoidable is inflation is going to be with us for a long time. So inflation affects everything. I mean, everything. So instead of having to pay, find a way to pay more and more money to get more food, grow it yourself. That's it. And if you can grow it and you harvest, you can use the seeds from that. You can even take the seeds from whatever you get at the grocery store and put that in the ground. That's an easy and cheap way to get started with stuff without even having to buy a plant at the nursery. One of the things that we use for the homestead here with our animals too is we gather a lot of that manure, not all of it, a lot of it stays out in the fields, but we gather a lot when the horses are put up in the pens and mucking the stalls the next day. That goes in the compost piles, and I got 3-4 big compost piles that are just aging away, and they're great. And so the production that comes from the areas where I've used that is tremendous.
Yeah. I think the problem today, though, is the average person, a majority of people, would go on your property and just see huge piles of shit. That's all they think it was. They would have no idea that there is a method behind your madness, and this is how you do things. This is sort of behind the curtain, right? This is how things get done. But at these days, most people, they just see it prepackaged at the grocery store and wouldn't have an idea about how to do it themselves. So it's just really, all that stuff is really important to learn, because like you said, the economy, the things that are like that most likely to happen, I think are a lot closer to home. And I think it involves all the things we do on a daily basis to get ourselves to be more self-reliant. That regardless of if nothing happens at all, or if the economy does tank, we're going to be a little bit more set for that. There's always the possibility of the big thing, right? The terrorist attack, like in your book, the things you talk about in your book. There's always that possibility, but those are more of the black swan type thing that we should be focused, but we should be paying attention to, but not super focused on and hyper focused on. We should be doing more of that, like the things you're doing.
Think about how it will affect you and your family today.
Yeah.
Right. So that's where I'm going with that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not something that you're going to be able to do overnight, whether you're talking about the firearms classes or you're talking about the gardening and the growing things. That is something that takes, years, especially if you're talking about gardening and figuring out, if you're starting from never doing it before, just getting to the sort of the point where I am, which is not even where you are, of being able to, you know, understanding soil composition and understanding what to grow this year in this spot, because last year you grew this, and all those different things you need to learn. That all takes time. And that's, you know, you can learn quite a bit these days, but you're going to have to get out there and do that stuff. So it's, and most people just don't have, just don't care to, I suppose. And that's sort of unfortunate, I think.
Well, it's funny, and we have a lot of visitors to our place, and a lot of them say, yeah, I want to do that. And I don't know if they ever really do or not, but it's something that you have to work up to. I mean, I started out I actually hated gardening when I was a kid, because my mom always used to make me go out and weed around the rose bushes.
There was do the stuff she didn't want to do.
Worse than that, and I didn't even have any gloves. It was awful. But once I got my own place, I said, oh, well, yeah, we need to make this look better. And so I started off with flowers. And then I said, well, what if I can use stuff that I can eat? You know, so then go into herbs, because those are more forgiving. They're easier to grow. And then branched out from that into fruits and vegetables. So, and I'm not perfect at it. I mean, I lose stuff regularly. Of those over 50 fruit trees and shrubs I planted, I've lost at least 5, I think. So I just... And they're all in the same general area, but there's always something that comes up. Every little microclimate is different. And, you know, the hose might have a clog in it that doesn't water that particular area as well as you want. All kinds of things. So
ultimately, they'll
get to the point where I won't be as dependent on water. It'll be the trees will all be mature enough that the roots will be plenty deep and it won't be as much of a problem. But not there yet.
Yeah, that's all those challenges. And that's sort of, you know, people like when they go to your property or it's like watching Little House on the Prairie. It looks fun. It looks great. It looks like it'd be, you don't see behind the scenes, though. You don't see you mucking the stalls. You don't see all the stuff that you have to do to maintain it and keep it functioning like that. People don't see that. So when they say, yeah, I want to do that or I want to do that, and then they actually try a little bit, they're like, no, I don't want to do that.
Well, and a big part of it too is figuring out what kind of plants grow in your area, what will do well and what won't.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of information out there that can be very helpful, but it's not 100% accurate necessarily for your place. One of the things that I found last year that I learned from Jack Spierko was a squash called a tromboncino squash. And we had maybe, I don't know, a dozen of those squashes last year. And this year we've had 4 or 5 times that.
Wow.
And they're big. They're like 3-foot long squashes. You can do very well by holding
on. Good Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. They're huge. So I have a little bit on my social media sites of a video that goes through the raised gardens that, and ends up on some of those Trombonchino squashes.
Yeah. Hey, Vision's here in the chat. I was on with Vision last week. That's right. You said they don't like the real work. Vision is sort of that rural. Vision is he loves the firearm stuff, all the training stuff. He's got his own YouTube channel as well. A very cool guy. But what was I going to say before Vision interrupted me? I can't remember now. he was talking about the real work, and then you were talking about how it changes from year to year. You think you can't really depend on, hey, I've got this much and I'm going to harvest this much, it's going to be fine, because you never know. Some things just aren't going to work out. Some things may work out better. This year I got hosed because of hail, right? I mean, Colorado's weather this year has been it felt like I lived in Oregon or something. It was insane this year. We got hail so many times that most of everything that I was growing, and I don't grow, I probably got a half an acre worth of stuff that I grow. Most everything was toast, other than, you know, some potatoes. I think I had a tomato plant and squash. Those suckers grow everywhere. And those, but most of the stuff you just never know. So you've got to not only have the skills and the knowledge to plant and garden and harvest and all that, but what are you going to do with that stuff afterwards as well, as far as preserving it and doing those things?
Exactly. And we're actually giving a lot away to family and friends, but we're working on the preservation stuff too. So the nice thing about the squashes is they have a long shelf life. But we've got a dehydrator. We're working on expanding use of that and canning and all those things. So we need to get better at that. I wouldn't say it's a hole in our preps, but it's something we need to work on.
Yeah. Well, and I think we all have those, whether it's, you know, not necessarily a hole, but there's always 15 things to work on to get better at. And we probably realistically have time to do one or two of those.
Right. And so the key is just to keep moving, keep working at it, and you'll get there.
Yep.
That's the other thing I've learned is that it's easy to get sucked into the urgency that people are telling you is important, that needs to be done right now, right this second. I've been finding out that that's not necessarily the case. You do have time. It's good to keep, you know, start today if you haven't already, but just keep moving forward. That's all. The more you do.
I talk about the fear mongering all the time, that you got to do this or you're going to die. You got to get it now. If you haven't started, I get emails still to this day. I used to get a bunch of them, but people saying, you know, you're telling people to just start prepping. If people haven't started now, it's already too late. And I'm like, I don't even respond to them. It's like, you know what? How long have people been saying that? Now, granted, there are things going on these days. It looks pretty damn, you know, like something could happen at the snap of a finger.
Sure.
But it's probably been that way before as well. So the truth is we just don't know. And, you know, move in the direction you can, do it at the pace you can and all that. What was that? Sorry.
Sure. Yeah. As long as there've been humans on Earth, that stuff's been happening. Absolutely.
Yeah. 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 And there's a lot of these situations that won't affect us personally. Say, I talked about this, I think it was last week with Vision, we were talking about the southern border. There are things, terrorist attacks that maybe happened in New York City or somewhere in other state that happened, but they don't directly affect you. Now, the big picture, they might change some things, but they don't directly affect you. So you really do have to prepare for those things that could directly affect you. And it goes back to what you were saying before, that food, the water, and the ability to protect it. It all comes down to that and your family. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So very cool. Well, we didn't quite have time to get into the whole world events thing, but I think we covered quite a bit of really good stuff at any rate. Before we get out of here though, one more time. And like I told everybody, I've got all the links that to Mark's all over the place. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all over the place. Got a YouTube channel that he just started up. But let everyone know where they can get your book, which is Amazon. But yeah, just anything you want to let everyone know, go ahead and sort of sell yourself before we get out of here. I really appreciate you having you on.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, no, my website is probably the central area that has the links to everything else, and that's markdixonauthor.com. So Mark is M-A-R-K. Dixon is spelled the correct way, D-I-C-K-S-O-N, and then author, A-U-T-H-O-R, all one word, markdixonauthor.com. It's got links to my social media there, and underneath at the bottom of that page, it has links to the retail site. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, I think Books A Million's on there. There's several, and they probably will not have it in stock, but if you go online, they can certainly order it for you and have it in your hands within a few days. So that would be the easiest way to go. All this social media stuff, I was not involved in at all before I got into this book stuff. My publisher said, "You need to do it." And I said, "Yes, ma'am." And so I'm working on that. It's pretty rough right now, I think. But as time goes on, I feel like I'm getting a little better. So I'm going to continue doing that every two or three times a week, I hope. I've got a lot of material ready to go. The other thing I was going to say is if you go to my website at markdixonauthor.com, you can get, if you enter your email, you will get the first three or so chapters of the book. And I've had people say they've done exactly that and they're hooked and then they have to go order the book. You will also get on a list for a newsletter, and I'll be starting that sometime within the next month or so, kind of a blog / newsletter combination thing.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I'm with you on social media. If it wasn't for me being online doing this stuff, I don't know how much I'd be doing it. But yeah, it's the nature of the beast these days. You gotta do it. So
yeah, that's what they say.
And with your book too, you had sent me, you had contacted me quite a while ago about it. And I was redoing the Bug Out Location membership website, doing a lot of things, and I sort of put it off. And then you got back a hold of me and I was like, oh man, I completely forgot about that. I started reading it thinking, okay, I hope I can get this read. We'll see. I'm not going to guarantee anything. I think it was like 3 days I finished the book. I mean, it was that good. It was, just a really good read. So I enjoyed it. Can't wait for the next one. And I don't read a lot.
All right. Thanks.
So with that, Mark, I appreciate you being on today. A lot of people in the chat have said thanks. Vision, subscribe to your YouTube channel. I think that makes, I did today too. So I think you're up to like 10 now. I know you just started that.
All right. Pressure's on now.
Yeah. Hey, we'll see where you are in a year though. Like you said, you just started all this stuff. So you never know where it goes.
Yeah.
Especially if your book is as popular as I think it will be. I mean, you never know. Pretty soon you'll be one of the big guys on the block.
Well, that would be interesting. I never had any idea a year ago when I was even shopping it to a publisher that I would be in this situation right now. And it is an Amazon bestseller. It actually became a bestseller within 24 hours of its release. So I'm pretty proud of that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, so... we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, best of luck. Yeah. I appreciate being on. And if you have another book, or even if you just want to get on and shoot the breeze, I you're welcome back on the show at any time. It was a great conversation with all the stuff you're doing and the training and the gardening and all that stuff. Very, very neat. Love getting the real man's perspective on things rather than, you know, the guy that knows it all, basically. I'm not going to call anyone out, but.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. This has been a lot of fun. I'd love to come back anytime.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone in the chat, appreciate you guys all joining in today. If you have any questions, email me. Or you just saw on Mark's website, he's got a contact form there as well. You can get a hold of him. He's got his book on Amazon all over the place. With that, I think we are done today. Mark, stick around for a couple minutes.
Sure.
But everyone else, take care and prepare. And we will talk to y'all later.